Shalom Aleichem, Chaver. This is the National Council of Young Israel. We welcome everyone. We especially welcome Rebbe for conference call number 134. Welcome, Rebbe.
Thank you so much. We'll begin with question number one. A hospital is currently insisting that when shofar is blown in individual rooms, it be limited to one TSRT, Tkia Shvarim Trua Tkia, to minimize the disturbance of other patients. There will be a more complete blowing of 30 sounds in some communal area, but not all patients or their family members can go there. What is the actual minimum that is acceptable given the concerns of the hospital? B, can the blower say a bracha or have listeners say one for this reduced set? C, if limiting to the apparent d'oraisa, should I get the hospital to allow that, or should one blow three TSRT, 3TST, 3TRT, or a TSRT, TST, TRT. D, for an abbreviated set, does one use a Tkia Akadola at the end? Okay, so the real minimum is really 30 calls. The Gemara Masechta Rosh Hashanah tells us that they're not sure exactly what is correct, so therefore they were metakein Tashrat, Tashat, Tarat. We know supposed to be three times, so each one of them is three times. It's called 30 kolos, because tashrat is called four. Four times three is 12. Then tashrat is another nine, tarat's another nine, another 18. 12 and 18 is 30. That's the minimum. 30 sounds, as was correctly pointed out here in the question. And anything less than that, in my opinion, a bracha should not be made, because you may not make a bracha when you're not fulfilling the mitzvah, exactly as the Rabbanon required you to do. Now, what is a din d'oraisa? So there are many who say you need all 30 to be yotzei din d'oraisa. There are two other ways out. One suggestion is made, no, d'oraisa, they're all good. They're all good. So the Rabbanon said you should do it in this fashion. If that's the case, any one of the three, just what we call in our language, as the Gemara Mishnah puts it, nine kolos. Shama tesha kolos v'tisha v'yom yotza. Nine kolos. So then all you'd have to do, for example, would be three tashats or three tarats. That would fulfill the mitzvah d'oraisa. So if you have no alternative, that's one way to go. Either three tashats or three tarats, to only a total of nine. Another possibility is that if you do three tashrats, Yotzei, even as a Rabbana, there's a discussion in Rabbi Natan, may hold that if you do a Tashrat, Mutav Lochosh Lesfekos Velola Hafsokos, so that's what they used to do in Rabbi Natan's town, in the Kiyas de Mu'umad, they just blew a Tashrat each time, total of 12, we have a total of 30, total of 12, and they said, look, if you do Malchios, you do Tashrat, so if it's Tashrat, you got it exactly right. If it's Tashrat or Tarat, you also got it right. You just have something in the middle, which is not so bad. So therefore, one might argue that the best thing to do is not three Tashrats or three Tarats, but three Tashrats, which would work. So that would be a better option if you're only left to do what would be called a Daraisa, instead of doing three of the shorter versions, Tashrat and Tarat. Do three tashrats, but there's another possibility, according to Rabbi Natan, you could be yotze even to the Rabbanan. Nonetheless, since most possibly disagree, you would not make a bracha if you cannot do the 30 kolos. Tkia gadol is only a minig, and of course, it should not be done in such a circumstance. Two, a pharmacist has a job working for a company hired by the insurance companies to verify prescriptions. The insurance company wants to ensure that there isn't a more cost-effective option. This pharmacist approves the medications. A medicine for gender change in children came to her for approval. Is she allowed to do it? If she doesn't get to an order, it bounces to her colleague, who in this case is morally not comfortable either. What's the din? So we have to discuss it from two perspectives. One is the lifnei evil of Sita and Mitchell by filling out this prescription. On the first glance, the answer is no, because there are other people who can do it. It's called Chad Imra Denara. Whoever wants to use this medicine to do a gender change can get the medicine prescription elsewhere. It's Chad Eber Denara. Interesting question would be, this medicine, which does certain things, is it certainly prohibited for us to do it? Would it or would it not be prohibited for a non-Jew to do? Now, we do know that, based on the Gemara, that homosexual activities is prohibited even for Jews from the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach of Arayis. In this particular case, making someone having a gender change does not necessarily lead to Gilui Arayis. Talking about children, anything can happen between now. We just don't know. So if there's no prohibition for a non-Jew, that would be advantageous for us. The Mishnah Lemelech. Mishnah Lemelech says that the only time we can be lenient, what we call Chad Iver Denara, is if the offender can acquire the offending object by him or herself. But if the offender cannot acquire the object by him or herself, even though there are other people who are willing to give that offending object to the offending party, and you decide to do it, that may not be considered Chad Iver Denara. It's like Trey Iver Denara. There are two sides of the river. They ask Reuven to throw it over, but if Reuven doesn't do it, then Shimon can do it. Or maybe John can do it. There may be, according to Mishnah Lemelech, a Lifnei Iver in that situation as well. That may impact on our situation, assuming that a non-Jew would be prohibited to do this, but not completely clear at all that that would be the case. So let's assume for the moment that there will not be a Lifnei Iver prohibition, either because it's permissible for a non-Jew or there are others who disagree with the Mishnah Lemelech. Fine, but there's another prohibition called Misayei Aladei Ovrei Aveira, which is a very serious problem in this situation. Nonetheless, if the offender is not Jewish, which I have to assume is the majority of situations, then there is no Easter of Misayeya. Why not? Because Misayeya is based on the din of Hocheach Tochiach Asamisecha. The person is supposed to rebuke a sinner, and certainly should not be facilitating the sinful activity, even in a case in which it could have happened without his participation. Therefore, if the offender is not Jewish, it's not Amisecha, there's no problem. Even if it is a Jewish person, the person is so far removed from religion that they're doing this act, it's arguable that they're not in the category of Amisecha either, as the Mishnah Berurah already points out in the Bi'ur Halacha Hilchos Yom Kippur, that Hocheach Tochiach as Amisecha means Amisecha b'Torah v'Mitzvos, someone who is fundamentally observant and just wants to do something sinful, then you would say that it's an Easter of Misayeya. But someone who's totally not observant, not Amisecha b'Torah v'Mitzvos, that prohibition would not apply. And therefore, it's arguable that this would be permissible not only if he's not Jewish, but even if it's a totally secular Jew as well. Question number three. A woman is in her ninth month. The doctor feels with a specific woman, if she fasts, it can bring on labor. May she do shiurim? If yes, at what point in the ninth month do we say it's safe for her to give birth and not break a fast until labor? B, a pregnant woman, after how many contractions can she start drinking shiurim? How close do they have to be? C, a woman who has cesarean section, does she have the halachos of toshlosha and shiva regarding achila? All good questions. Very correctly, it's pointed out that this doctor feels with this specific woman. That's important because some doctors say that no women should fast on Yom Kippur. That's against the din of Shulchan Aruch. Explicitly, Muboros fast on Yom Kippur. But if the doctor restricts his or her comments to this specific woman, you have to take them very, very seriously. Because this particular woman may be different than the average woman, and we have to give credence to what the doctor is saying. And therefore, the answer to all these questions is the same. It depends what the doctor says. Depends what the doctor says. So we have to ask the doctor. We know that you are the doctor. You tell us when in the ninth month it's safer to give birth. The same doctor, how should we say it, apesha us or apesha hitu, same doctor who prohibits the fasting, then he's the doctor or she's the doctor who's going to say when it's permissible to fast into the ninth month. Same question, contractions. How many contractions? How close? It's the doctor's call. The only call of a rabbi is C. And the answer is yes. Even if she's a cesarean section, she's the same halachas of Tov Shlosha and Shiva regarding Achil, which means within 3 days we force her to eat, and within 7 days we encourage her to eat. Question four. The person has been diagnosed with dementia. They have to fast on Yom Kippur. What a sad story. Dementia comes in all different stages. Let's assume for the purpose of this question, total dementia. Person has no idea who anybody is, doesn't know what Yom Kippur is, doesn't know anything, sadly. And there are such patients, sadly. If that's the case, of course, there's no obligation to fast on Yom Kippur. The person has no idea what Yom Kippur even is. Nonetheless, it is preferable, as long as the patient is able to eat by him or herself, if the food is put in front of the patient, that that be done, as opposed to taking the food and placing it directly into the mouth of the patient. There's a prohibition of lo sa'achilum. Don't put non-kosher food into the mouth of an individual, even though the individual has no personal obligation. That would probably apply to this case as well. There are those who are more strict and say even putting the food in front of that person would be a problem, so it's better to get someone who's not Jewish to put it in front of the person. But if that's not possible, it's much better to put it in front of the person than to put it in the person's mouth. Again, it depends if there's non-Jews there, what the particulars are, but that's the situation of total dementia. Now, if there's less than total dementia, again, it's up to the individuals to figure out if the person knows what Yom Kippur is. There may still be a possibility of having them fast. Again, depending on the severity of the dementia and the general health of the patient. Question number five. A person with a failing kidney, the doctor says he needs to drink. The doctor is a Gentile or a secular, is he Neman? The answer is yes. It's explicit in the Shulchan Aruch that there is a default assumption of Nemanus on the part of a doctor, because a doctor would not want to say something which would turn out to be false. And since, especially in today's world, whatever a doctor says can be checked up by other doctors and other sources. So if the doctor says a failing kid needs to drink, you absolutely need to drink based on what the doctor says. Six, the one relying on the app Mize Manim, which calculates the Zman via degrees instead of fixed minutes to Motzei Yom Kippur. I think that the consensus of Poskim today is quite the contrary, that degrees is better than fixed minutes. Fixed minutes do not account for changes in latitude, changes in time of the year. We do know, this is clearly demonstrable, it takes longer for the sun to set in New York, from the time of sunset till it gets dark in New York than in Yerushalayim. It's been the Holy Land can testify to this. And it's also clear that it takes longer in the summer than it does in the spring or fall. Now, fortunately, Yom Kippur falls out in the fall, close to the autumnal equinox, so it's a shorter period of time than it would be in the summer, or even in the winter for that matter. And New York is further north than Israel, so it takes longer. And there are many ways of skinning the cat. There are different numbers of degrees that are utilized to figure these things out. And the Chabad calendars are very, very lenient. They found the Alter Rebbe. And it's a very, very short period of time. I think it's 5 point something degrees. The more traditional calendar is approximately Rav Moshe Shir. They use 8.5 degrees. You know, let's talk minutes because they're all approximations for the purpose of New York City because we're close to the equinox. Rav Moshe had a shear between 45 and 50 minutes until you see three stars. It's hard to understand why it should take so long. Rav Moshe said, based upon personal observation from his terrace, his balcony, on the FDR Drive, it seems that New York City has two kinds of pollution, what we call pollution, smog, and what others call light pollution. There's so many artificial lights, it's harder to see stars. I can tell you that we were up in camp two different summers, on different occasions, different people. In July, they found three stars after 32 minutes, which indicates, which is consistent with one of the charts that come out, that within maximally 34 minutes, you can see three stars here in New York City. This is for people who may know something about the sky, but have no particular vision. They're not using binoculars or anything. You see three stars. Well, that, of course, would be translated to a little bit less than that in September. Let's assume maximally 30 minutes. So if someone is ill, it's permitted for them to eat after 30 minutes. The Gudas Rabbanim, in his famous sack of post-World War II, which they say was in a compromise made with the Rebbe of Satmar, who was upset that they were using a very, very short time, maybe approximate to the Chabad time of half an hour or so. He said it's much too short, you don't see three stars. And on the other hand, they were upset with him because he was following Rabbeinu Tam's man in the other direction, allowing people to do malacha after Shkia. So the story is told, I can't confirm that it's true, but that's what's said. They made a compromise that the Satmar Rebbe said, okay, in America, no one can do malacha after sunset. And the Rabbanim agreed to extend the Motzei Shabbos until what they called then, which is very easy for most of the ignorant people at the time, an hour after Lichtbenchen. And Lichtbenchen is considered 18 minutes before sunset. So an hour later, it's 42 minutes. I mean, it could be 40 to 44 if it changes 2 minutes in either direction between Friday and Motzei Shabbos. But 42 minutes, that's the official Zman, which is a very good Zman. It is just about Rav Moshe's Zman. Rav Moshe said 44 to 50, 45 to 50. In his circumstance, without the light and without the smog, 42 seems very reasonable. And that's a good time. And for example, in our shul, we put out a time for Ma'ariv. Ma'ariv is around 45 minutes, between 40 and 45 minutes after sunset. So those who are feeling weak, to eat at the time that's printed for Ma'ariv, that's okay. For those who are stronger, they daven Ma'ariv first. Takes another, let's say, 10, 15 minutes. So you're talking about closer to an hour, which has a period of time of Tosefes Yom HaKippurim, which is very important. Tosefes Yom HaKippurim is the Raisa according to just about everybody. Shabbos and Yom Tov, the Rambam seems to not hold from it. And those who are strong enough should wait till after Ma'ariv is over in order to eat. But again, if a person is weak, he wants to eat at the time that we print for Ma'ariv about 42 minutes, that's okay. Someone is very weak, they can rely upon the even the small lenient opinion of 30 minutes in order to be able to eat. Again, I'm telling you in absolute numbers. In theory, it depends upon the degrees, but I'm giving you numbers for New York City in the autumnal equinox, approximately when Yom Kippur falls out. Number 7. They often make Avdalah and Shul, and there are people Yotzi by it because they do not want to make it themselves. I tell my wife to make her own Avdalah at home. So I've already been Yotze. Someone told me that if I have in mind specifically not to be Yotze in Shul, I can make it again at home for my wife. What is this best way to handle it? That is the best way to handle it. Do exactly that. Have in mind not to be Yotze, and you can still be Motzi other people. Who said so? The Alta Lubavitcher Rebbe, here in Siman Reish Tzadivov, Sif Yud Zayin, quoted by the Piskei Tshuvos in footnote 169. That's the best way, because women often don't like to make Abdullah on their own for a variety of reasons. Number 8, Aishu has a lot of elderly mispalalim. Can they sit a little during the Sa'at Musaf when they feel weak and daven slowly? Or should they rush to finish while they can still stand? Certainly they should sit. You want them to be able to daven properly. Now, can they sit a little during the Sa'at Musaf? Yes, they should sit a little. What does a little mean? So ideally, the best time to sit is at a time that would not be what we call in our language mi'akef. It's a time when if you left it out, it would still fulfill the bare minimum. So I would say, if you want to take out a mavzer, that they should stand until they get to the words Ata Kadosh. They could sit, Uvchein Tein Tachtecha, those paragraphs presumably would not be ma'akef. It's a question where they come from. The Rebbe suggested maybe the Malchus of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, Rosh Hashanah Daf Lamed Beis. That's not for now. They should get rise again for Ata Kadosh, HaMelech HaKadosh, Ata Bechartanu, and Vaititen Lono, and Yala V'Yovo. And again, this Musaf is very long. I made an error. There's no Yala V'Yovo in Musaf. They should stand for Vaititen Lono, Bipnei Chataenu, etc. Then, I believe, when they finish the Musaf, they can sit down again for Aleinu Aken Nekave. That presumably is not Miyakev. Stand up again for the 10 Sukkim and the Malchios. Sit down again for Ata Zocher. Stand again for the 10 Sukkim and then the Bruch of Zichronos. Sit down again Ata Neglesa. Stand up again for the 10 Sukkim until the end of the Shemona Esrei. If that should suffice, then they would have stood up for what I think is Ma'akev. The other parts, at least arguably, now Ma'akev, and they're not skipping them. They're just saying sitting down is also good b'di'evit. In their case, of people who are elderly, the comes of the chatchila, they should be able to dive in slowly, properly. Question number 9. It's common for a friend to pick up an item from the store, say, for $2.56. The recipient will offer him $3 and say, keep the change, or give the extra to tzedakah. Are either of these permitted? Is there ever a heter of davar muat? Yes, there is a heter of davar muat. There are many, many details. The better of the two options is to say, listen, give the extra to tzedakah and put it in the pushka. It means put it in the charity box in shul, where there's no what we call in our language tovas hana. The person putting it in the pushka gets no credit, gets no honor, gets nothing. Just giving it pure and simple to the tzedakah ani and pushka in the shul. This way there would be no shaila of ribbis. Question 10. The muat has come up in Ramah 162.1, correct? As allowing lending a loaf of bread in exchange for another loaf of bread, unlike the usual saw, which is prohibited. But many rabbis disagree. Rav Moshe seems to limit this heter to something that is traded as a currency and not as a commodity. L'maisa, is davar muat allowed, and how small is small enough? The answer is, there are many, many details, as I said earlier. Look at Bris Yehuda, if you like, in Perek Yud Zayin, Siv Beis, all the long footnotes there. And he says the truth. The minhag is to be matirit if it's davar muat. Why? What's the expression? The low kapti. It's just too small of an amount for people to really be concerned about. Now, obviously, once you talk about that, how do you measure davar muat? Every situation is different. They say in Israel, kol mikre legufo. Every case is individualized. Is it small enough that low kapti, then the mitigates to be lenient. If it's larger than that, the heter does not apply. Number 11. Often a young couple will take out a mortgage together with the parents who may have a much better credit history. Sometimes the parent is the primary borrower and the child makes the payments. Other times the parent is the co-signer in the event the child defaults. Are either of these permitted? What should be done in the case if the loan is already in progress for several years? It is absolutely not permitted There used to be a very wonderful Rav, Rabbi Zilberberg, Moshe Zilberberg, who had brought a beautiful sefer, Zichron Tzvi Meir. His son is the famous of Tzvi Meir Zilberberg, the big Magid Yerushalayim. He wrote a sefer on Ribbis, and we'd be invited to come to our community here in Riverdale from time to time to speak about Ribbis. Every time he started with this, here's the one case which is frequent, even among Shomrei Mitzvos, who don't know any better, an Issa D'Oraisa. Because at first glance, what's wrong? Take a mortgage from a Chase Manhattan bank, a Goyesha bank, and the son can't get the mortgage. He has no credit. The father gets the mortgage, and the son pays to the Goyesha bank. What can be bad? He's giving checks to Chase Manhattan bank. What's bad is his checks to the Chase Manhattan bank are paying of a debt of his father. So it's as if he's giving the money to the father. The shayla of Ribbis D'Oraisa, and the same thing applies even as a question of Oravus. In both cases, totally prohibited the possibility of it being a Ribbis D'Oraisa. So what do you do about it after it happened? That gets very complicated. You have to try to create what we call a heteriska. A heteriska. How do you make a heteriska after the fact? That's complicated again. What you have to try to do is arrange that whatever was paid until now is viewed as being paid towards the principal, not towards the interest. Now you make a heteriska from here on in. And of course, the percentage that has to be added is going to be much higher than it would be ordinarily, because now the amount of time is shorter and the gap between the principal and the interest plus in total is the same. So it's a greater percentage per month, as the case may be. It's complicated. I was advised to call our Bezin, the Bezin of America. They will help you figure out how to do it specifically. Number 12, which is better? Getting a mortgage from a publicly traded bank or a credit union? Meager and in, they're both the same. There was a big tumult about credit unions a while ago. Most authorities feel that credit union is exactly the same as a bank. But since there are those who disagree, all things being equal, it's better to get from a bank if you're unable to get from a credit union. 13. Previous conference call. I don't remember this, but we'll take it from scratch. If one enters a porta potty to just change clothes after white water rafting, is one required to wash his hands with water 3 times? To explain, a porta potty is a temporary bathroom put outside where there is no indoor plumbing available. The waste material goes into a liquid with a strong chemical odor to cover over the smell of the waste. Good question. Good question. Assuming that a regular bathroom in a house where there is plumbing has what we call in our language Ruach Ra, Lush of the Shulchan Aruch, the Ruach Ra in the Beit HaKiseh, presumably would apply here as well. This may be even worse than a regular bathroom. Why? A regular bathroom, the waste is flushed down the toilet, and according to many authorities, it's compared to the Gemara's expression of Bate Kisa de Parsoi, which does not have a status of Beit HaKiseh, because all the waste went all the way down, far away. The Chazon Ish is Mesupik, because in the case of our modern bathrooms, it doesn't go down until you flush it a little bit later. But there are Mekilim, there are those who say it's not a Beit HaKiseh. Number two, our bathrooms are multi-purpose rooms, not exclusively for using it to remove the waste of the body. The typical bathroom in America today has a mirror, and the people are shaving and they're brushing their teeth, and who knows what else they're doing. There's medicines there. All kinds of things go on in bathrooms today. So those are two reasons which may not apply in our case. Because in our case, it's used exclusively for eliminating the body waste and nothing else. And if I understand the facts correctly, the waste does not go far down. It just it lingers there, but its smell is eliminated by this powerful other smell. So it could be actually worse. However, there's another consideration, which is timely. Do we have Ruach Ra b'zman hazeh? Maybe this Ruach Ra no longer exists. That sounds heretical. but it's timely in the following sense. If you look on the smag, Sefer Mitzvot Gadol, Hilchos Yom HaKippurim, he says, on Yom Kippur, even though on typical days we wash our hands 3 times in the morning, some say 4, to eliminate the ruach ra of having slept through the night, on Yom Kippur, you may not, says the smag. Why? We no longer have ruach ra. No longer have ruach ra, so you, on a typical day, you want to be strict, no, not on Yom Kippur. So, I mean, strictly speaking, there would not be a requirement to wash hands 3-4 times every morning according to the smag. We do it just as a extra chumrah, but not mikaradin. But that being the case, you go into any bathroom, whether it be a bathroom in the porta potty or in your own private house, you would not be required to wash hands 3 times because of ruach ra. And there are many who are meikel b'zman hazeh based on the smag. Even if they're not meikel on Yom Kippur, they do wash their hands 3-4 times in the morning because it's not a chitza shel tanug. But over here, there's room to be lenient on that basis as well. Question number 14. Regarding Shnayim Mikra, is it better to do it all in one time without interruption or do a little every day? If every day, what is the best way to break it up? B, if one has limited time, should he learn Targum or Rashi or make sure that he finds time for both? C, if one did not complete 1 week's parasha, should he finish that first before proceeding to the next week or start the current week and only after go back to the last week's? All good questions. The problem with Shnayim Mikra that people don't do it at all. So any way you do it is good, in my view. I know there are those who say better this way, those who say better that way. We shouldn't be focusing on what's better. We should be focusing on just getting it done. And in my opinion, getting it done today means Shnayim Mikra and 1 Rashi. Shulchan Aruch says that Rashi is a substitute for Targum. It seems to me that in today's world it's a better than the original Targum. The reason being, as the Rush writes in the Masechta Megillah, they used to do it and be a Meturgamah by Kriyas HaTorah, and we stopped it because people know Hebrew better than Aramaic. Well, it's certainly true today, and therefore I don't see why Targum should be recited. Better to learn the Rashis and this way satisfy the obligation. Makes it a little bit easier. Shnayim Mikav Yechad Rashi, and one of the Mikvahs can be done while you're hearing the Kriyas HaTorah on Shabbos. According to some authorities, it's even preferable to whisper along with the Kriya so your mind won't wander and you'll just lose the place, you won't hear properly. So that's what I think should be done. You read the Mikra once with the Rashis, and the second Mikra can be fulfilled during Kriyas HaTorah. 15. Oh, as far as which week should we do, to me, just get it done. Whether you do this week first, the last week first. I'm sure that you'll find in Poskim long discussions of all these details. As far as I'm concerned, just get it done. The order and how you break it up is not that significant. 50. It's about the Kea below skills for women if the davening or later in the day. Who is supposed to make the bracha? The answer is the women should make the bracha. It says so explicitly in the Poskim, in Shulchan Aruch, Mishnah Berurah. 16. Can a security guard be allowed to buzz people in on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur rather than open the door each time? Strictly speaking, the answer is yes. He's just too lazy to get up and walk to the door and let you in. And therefore, strictly speaking, the answer is yes. It's up to the discretion of the local Rav of the shul to decide whether this may be considered to be a zilzal, desecration of the spirit of Shabbos. He's buzzing and buzzing and buzzing. Even if it's permissible, technically, we have this meta-category of zilzul b'Shabbos, which is a judgment call for every rav and every shul. 17. How is one yotze eating shalosh shudis on the first day of Rosh Hashanah? Very good question. If you look at the Mishnah Berurah, in Siman Tuf Kuf Chof Tes, Sivkot and Ches, and the Sharatiyah, Sivkot and Tes, he says it's better to be yotze before Mincha Ketana. Mincha Ketana is 2.5 hours before the sun sets. That's a better time to have the Shalosh Shudis. Some people, if they had lunch so late, they may not have any appetite at that point in time. They'd rather wait a little bit longer for Shalosh Shudas. Some people even daven mincha right after Musaf, so there's no need to get back to shul until Maariv time, so they can eat Shalosh Shudas just before Shkia, like we do on a typical Shabbos in some places, so they can postpone it so they work up an appetite. That would be true. At the same time, if a person is having the Shalosh Shudas later in the day, have to be more mindful. No matter when you have it, you have to be mindful to allow enough room that you should have a teyavon, an appetite, when you're having the Yom HaDikah meal on Moshe Shabbos, which is the second day of Rosh Hashanah. You look there in Tav Kuf Chav Tes. You also look at Siman Reish, Sadi Aleph, Sifkot and Yizayin, the Bi'al Locha, and there in Sif Gimel. There they say, and there in other places, let's keep in mind that Shabbos is a Shabbos and a Yom Tov Doraisa. Second day is only the Rabbanim. So we shouldn't go hungry on Shabbos in order to have an appetite on Motzei Shabbos. But there's a big difference between going hungry, which we should not do, and having so much to eat that you have no appetite at night, which you should not do. So again, all things being equal, it's better to have it before Mincha Ketana, approximately 2.5 hours before the sun sets. It again depends upon the length of the day. We're talking approximately the equinox. So it would be about 2.5 hours here in New York. The charts have Mincha Ketana. If it's not practical to do it then, you just have no appetite, you can do it later, but then be even more careful not to eat too much to eliminate your appetite for the Motzei Shabbos, second day Rosh Hashanah, Suda. 18. What is an Ovel supposed to do for our kofas on Simchas Torah? May he participate in the dancing? Should he walk out? Or just stay inside and watch everyone else? The answer to the first two questions is no and no. The answer to the third question is yes. Stay inside and watch everyone else. You don't have to walk out, but the custom is, it's a custom, that you don't participate in the dancing. B, what if the rabbi of the shul is an Ovel? He's usually the one who leads the dancing. C, may an Ovel dance after Kiddush Levana? So the Ovel should not dance after Kiddush Levana because dancing is considered to be an act of joy, which an Ovel should not partake of. B, it seems to me that it depends. Ideally, this happened to me twice when I was an Avelis for a parent, Simchas Torah. How should we say, you can lead from the side. You clap enough and sing enough, even if you're not actually dancing in the middle with the Simchas Torah like everybody else, it's still possible to do it. If, on the other hand, it's impossible, you're the life of the party, and if you don't actually get up and dance in the middle with everybody else and carry on a Sefer Torah, the Hakavos will not take place or they'll be dead, then I think it's okay. In my view, the idea of not taking go around Hakavos, both for the with the Lulav and with Sefer Torah, is purely a minig. In my opinion, it's based upon the Ramban and the Netziv. There is no Avelis post-Shiva in Chol HaMoed or in Yom Tov. Doesn't exist. There's a stira in the Rosh, and even in the Ramban, is there Avelis or no Avelis in Yom Tov? The answer is, it depends. If someone passes away on Yom Tov, then there is Avelis on Yom Tov. If someone passes away before Yom Tov knocks off the Shiva, then strictly speaking, there is no Avelis on Yom Tov, so we paskin. But the Amid Hagen, like for example, the Hakafas is just a minig. If the minig is going to prevent the Hakafas from taking place properly in shul, there's room to be lenient. Question number 19. Someone dropped off two large vials of real Haggadah at Shul Pesach. Are they shameless? They need to be buried? The answer is no. Shameless is only if it's actual print. 20. I'm a chiyuv in shnas avelos davening for my mother. I arrived late to shul for shachris. I was able to catch up to the minyan when the minyan had completed Shmon Esrei while I had reached Shira Chadasha before Shmon Esrei. It was a minyan b'tzumtzum, me being one of the tisha onim. Was I correct in taking over as Shliach Tzibur for Chazoras Hashatz while fulfilling my own Shmon Esrei and saying Elokai Netzor at the conclusion of Shmon Esrei? What about a case where there was more than a minyan mitzumtzum? It seems to me that this is not such a great idea. Not such a great idea to do Chazoras Hashatz when you haven't said the Sa'an Shmon Esrei yet is not a lechatchila. This is found in Mishnah Berurah, Simin Kuf Chav Dalet Sifkat and Dalet, and therefore I believe in these both of these cases, it would be better if somebody else would be the Shatz, and the person who came late should stay along with the Shliach Tzibur. 21. Can a house cleaner who is coming to work on Friday night do malocha to clean the house? Can she mop, vacuum, or turn on hot water? Well, generally speaking, it's a problem. If you're telling someone to do something, and there's no, how should we say it best, no commonplace alternative to achieve the same result without a malacha, then I believe it's prohibited. Can't tell them to do it. If they come every Friday night, even if you didn't tell them, as if you told them, the concept of shlichus applies when it's done on a regular basis, even without saying anything. Look at Simon Shin Chafei in Arachayim. So therefore, you should not allow it. But there may be things which can be done without a malacha. For example, the woman is mopping. One could argue that a similar result can be achieved by sweeping. Sweeping is permissible. If that's the case, then she decides to mop instead of sweep. That's her decision. Vacuum, I think, can certainly be achieved by sweeping instead of vacuuming. The problem with vacuum is a different one. If it makes a lot of noise, something called avsha milsa, you make a lot of noise on Shabbos with a malacha, it gives it an appearance that there's something going on which is wrong. So zilzul, as the case may be, or marasayin, as the case may be. So vacuums would be a little bit more complex. As far as hot water, that's even more lenient. Why? Because when you put on hot water, what's happening? What's happening is, there's nothing wrong with having hot water come from the faucet to fill up the woman wants to do to wash the dishes. She wants to use hot water. Nothing wrong with that water. You know what the problem with hot water is? When the hot water comes out, additional cold water goes into the boiler. We call that in our language a psikreshi. Ain't a miskana psikreshi. According to most poskim, that prohibition does not exist with respect to a non-Jew. And the reason for it is, I tell the non-Jew to do a malacha, he or she is my shaliach to carry out my will, which makes it a problem for me. Here, I didn't tell the person to have cold water come into the boiler. I told the person, listen, put on hot water to wash the dishes. So what happens is a psik ratio. It's an inevitable consequence of what I asked the person to do. Since I didn't say to do it explicitly, there's no Easter of Shlichus, that's the consensus view, although there are those who are more strict, there's room to be lenient than psik ratio. Finally, question number 22. If the chos and kal do not eat at their wedding, you still say Sheva Brachos after benching. This is a problem. Some of they're so busy with their dancing, they don't eat anything. I've had cases where I had to postpone the Sheva Brachos so that the chos and kal should wash if everyone's already gathered around the table. I had a case like that. It's a big problem. According to most authorities, if you look on the Sefer and the Sum Kil Chosim, Perek Yud Dal Sif Pei Vav, and the footnotes there, 186 and 7, who says no? Rabbi Shlomo Kluger, Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Avadia, all say no. There is a minority view, the Sofer Smokos, that says yes, but we follow the majority, especially since Sofek Brochos Lahakel. Thank you very much. Next Siva Vechasima Tova to everyone.
Rebbe, we thank you very much, and we wish everyone a Gitka Ben Shiar, and we hope to call upon Rebbe again in the near future. Take care, everybody.
Bye.